If there were a world record award to give for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But even though MLB had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Seipa, and this week I'm joined by Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
Good, good.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Better than the Mets, I guess.
I mean,
that's a low bar. All right, so For promote, extend, trade this week. We talked a little bit about him a couple of weeks ago, but in 1941, the season ended today, and Ted Williams achieved immortality and hit 406. And he technically might have immortality in another way, because his kids basically chose to ignore his will and had him cryonically frozen, and he right now is a frozen head waiting to be reanimated sometime in the future. So, if you woke up in the year 3000 and you were head in a jar, who would you want to be on the shelf with? Who would you be okay with being on a shelf with? And who would you hate to be on the shelf with? First head on the jar is Jon Stewart. The next one is Jerry Seinfeld. And the third is Matt Groening, who is from Portland, but I think he might secretly be a Mets fan because he's used the Mets in a lot of iconic scenes in The Simpsons and Futurama. And all of these three heads in a jar, they're all canonical because they were all in Futurama. So we're okay.
It was Jon Stewart. What was the second name?
Jon Stewart, Seinfeld, and Matt Groening.
Have we started?
Hmm?
Have we started recording?
Yes.
Yes.
Ah!
Ken, get with it.
No. I don't wanna. I would maybe Groening because I would want to ask him about like The Simpsons and Futurama, like that'd be a fun one. But then I feel like once I'm done with those questions, I'd be like,
okay, bye. Well, now what?
Yeah, now I like turn around and I'm like, so it's probably the dude I'm promoting or extending is Jon Stewart. Because he's Jon Stewart, and he's cool.
Same.
Yep. I think I would trade Groening, to be honest, for reasons I don't really want to get into.
Sure. Okay.
Let's see. Extend Stewart, I think, and promote Seinfeld. I look forward to Seinfeld being in the booth every year.
I'm the exact opposite. I'm trading Seinfeld because I just... He annoys the hell out of me. It's just his voice. His voice
you don't find
is
it
like,
funny?
No, I don't find his comedy funny, and his voice is like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Really? Yeah. I like the show. I've never seen his stand up.
And I could imagine if your head's in a jar and you're just stuck together for like years and years and years, I'd go crazy.
He's gonna ask you what's the deal with the jar, and you're gonna like
exactly.
You're gonna jump out and fight him.
So that would be that would be my doom. All right, let's move over now to Asia, and we'll look at the teams there. And the Yuna Lions went 2-3, so that leaves them at 23-20-1, which is tied for first place now with the Fubon Guardians, and three games ahead of the other teams, the Raccoon and Monkeys and the Brothers Elephants. And same old face here, Chi-Chae Su, he is the hitter of the week. He went 11 for 22 with four doubles, a hit by pitch, and a stolen base. And all five games that he played this week, they're all multi-hit games. And he actually has a streak going back of eight games. He's had at least two or more hits. So he is peaking right now. And pitcher of the week is Tim Melville. And he won his first game in Taiwan this week. He threw six scoreless innings. He's got two hits. He walked four and he struck out four. And some interesting news about the league before we move on. The CPBL announced that the COR of the league balls is going to be changed for the 2021 season. So COR is the coefficient of restitution, and that's basically a scientific way of saying that a ball goes far when you hit it. things that affect the COR, elevation, humidity, the materials that the ball's made out of, how tightly it's wound, the smoothness of it, all that kind of stuff affects the ball. So that's why you have places like the PCL where it's very dry and humid and the ball flies off the bat. The current COR in Taiwan, it's 560, and they want to lower it by 10 hundredths to 550. So that's going to depress the offense a little bit, and it's kind of needed because, as we know, the league is an extreme hitters league to the point that basically only a handful of domestic pitchers are able to hang and everyone else really has to be an international signing. It's comical. The league average is... this is the league average. 301, 360, 466.
301?
301, 360, 466. On average, 5.97 runs are scored per game. So that's basically...
Wild.
Yeah, the average player is basically Jeff McNeil. Lowering the COR is going to make things a little bit more even. And then for reference, the MLB COR, it's about 546. So that's right now about 15 points lower in Taiwan. And the KBO and the NPB average, it's actually way lower, 413. But those two leagues, they test it differently. So in reality, the COR might be higher than what they say. Moving on over now to Korea and the LG Twins. They went 3-3. So they're 65, 50, and 3 for the year. But they're still 6.5 games behind the NC Dinos. Because they've basically been on fire this last past week and have two wins directly against the Twins themselves. Roberto Ramos, he's back and he's hitter of the week. He had an insane week. He went 9 for 22 with a triple, 5 home runs, 4 walks, and 9 RBI. So one hell of a week.
Is he still on pace for the home run stuff?
If there were more games being played in the year, I think he might be. He's up to 37 right now, which is tied for the league lead. But I don't think that he's going to be able to get to the record. I think the record is offhand 52 or 54.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, there's just not enough games to get there.
I couldn't remember what it was, though. No.
Impressive.
Unless he's literally, like, roided Barry Bonds for the rest of the time, I don't think he's going to get it.
And the guy that is tied with him is Mel Rojas Jr., and he's second cousins or first cousins once removed. I don't know how any of that works, but he's related somehow to Louis Rojas, the Mets manager, so.
Interesting.
Yep, little factoid there.
I feel like Louis Rojas is related to a lot of people.
Right, yeah, I mean, the Alou family, there's a lot of them, so. Definitely has the potential to be related to many, many baseball people.
Which is so fun. I like that stuff.
And then the pitcher of the week is Tyler Wilson, and he allowed one earned run over 7 innings, scattering 6 hits, walking 1, and striking out 6. And last, and definitely least, are our poor Yakult Swallows, and they went 3-4 this week, which leaves them at 32, 45, and 6, which is 19 and a half games behind the Yomiuri Giants.
Oh.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if they have it in them to make up a 19 and a half game deficit. But we'll see, I guess. Hitter of the week, again, is Munetaka Murakami. And he went 5-for-19 with 4 homers and 4 walks. And he's up to 17 home runs now. So he's tied for 4th in the Central League in homers. He's 2nd to Keita Sano in batting average. He's trailing by 20 points right now, 352 to 332. But he's still 1st in the league in OBP. He's 1st in the league in slugging now, 1st in the league in OPS. So it is a tall order, but in theory he could end up leading in every single offensive category minus stolen bases, which would be wild to see what the voters do. But kind of unlikely, but you never know. And then pitcher of the week is Albert Suarez, and he gave up 1 earned run over 7 innings, giving up 3 hits, walking 3, and striking out 3. So very even betting, pitching line.
The lack of the strikeouts, like we've been doing this all year now, and the lack of the strikeouts always jars me.
Yeah, I mean, the Swallows, they just really have no pitching whatsoever.
Yeah.
And
the MLB is where the strikeouts are.
Yeah,
in the world, I guess.
Japan is very traditional in the sense that there's still definitely a stigma against striking out, and you see that, you know, in terms of pitching lines every night. I mean, there's definitely guys that strike batters out. It's kind of, I guess, what we see is kind of skewed because the Swallows are just such a bad team, especially when it comes to pitching. And Agawa, their ace, is a guy that, like we were talking about when he threw his no-hitter, it was also the first time that he ever reached double-digit strikeout totals in his career, and he's like an 8 or 9 or 10 year veteran. So not a single time did the ace, a moderately good pitcher, you know, in comparison to the rest of the league, hit double digit strikeouts. So that is an outlier,
pretty wild.
I'd say.
Yeah. Pretty wild in comparison to what we're used to.
I mean, back in the day when you had, you know, guys like Darvish were striking out the world, Otani striking out the world. There's another pitcher in Japan, Fujinami. He strikes out a lot of guys. He's extremely wild and walks as many guys too, but, you know, they do have their share of guys that get all of the swings and misses and everything. All right, back to the U.S. now. And we spent probably the majority of last week's show basically bemoaning the fact that the Mets are going to get screwed in the 2021 draft if the MLB used some kind of combination of 2019 and 2020 records to figure out draft order. And it turns out maybe things were a little premature, because the report that got us all up in arms was from Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo from MLB.com. And, you know, they're reputable enough. But then like a day or two later, Jeff Passan had an article at ESPN. And his sources indicated that the 2021 draft was highly likely to just be a 2020 win-loss record. So at the end of the day, who the hell knows, I guess. MLB probably doesn't actually know either.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
What about this process has made it? Made them seem
very
like they
true.
Know anything.
Exactly. But obviously, just basing things on 2020 record is going to benefit the Mets a lot more. Yeah. I was rooting for them to go 0-60. They didn't, unfortunately. They did win at least one game, so I lost that. But at least looking at it from this draft context, they do have record under 500, so that's, you know, solid. They're still going to end the season with a pretty decent pick. As things stand right now as we're recording, they would be probably making their pick with the 9th pick because they're 26-33. I guess we'll have a final update next week since their game's happening right now as we're talking. And then depending on how the Mets do and how other teams in that big scrum that they're in do, things are going to change.
It's currently 11-3 Nationals. So
that's, that, That's good. Basically, the Mets need the best pick that the Mets possibly could have is going to be as low as 7. And in order to get there, the Mets needed to lose, the Nats needed to win, and now Kansas City needs to win. So we have 2 of those 3. So if Kansas City wins,
is winning.
Good. Okay. So we want that.
It's 2-1 in the top of the 8th.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, whoever their closer is better. Who they have? Rosenthal is their closer?
No, they traded him.
They traded him. Okay. Well,
but like Josh Stuhlman has been closing. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Stuhlman. You know who I'm talking about. He throws really hard. He's good.
Well,
he's been good.
He better lock down that save. But if he does, the Mets are going to pick 7, and that's a pretty good pick. Not good enough for like Kumar Rocker or Jack Leiter, barring some crazy unforeseen stuff
Steve,
happening.
Would you say that the 7th overall pick is Jared Kelnick territory?
It might be. It might just be.
I mean, they needed something like it sucks because I'd rather, like, obviously I'd rather them be good and just pick 30th because they won 100 games or 50 or it's 40, whatever. But, like, if you're going to be bad, just be, like, top 10.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
If you're going to be bad, be really bad.
Yeah, like,
no
sure,
nightmares.
Be one, but, like, they were always going to be way too talented to be one unless everyone opted out. Because, like, you're dealing with teams who are trying to be one. But if you're going to lose, be 7.
Like, yeah, no.
I'll take 7.
7 is a good place. It means that, you know, you were bad, but not completely unwatchable like the Pirates, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's just, yeah, like I don't really like tanking as a philosophy just because it makes watching the team that I root for so bad that it's not fun. But, like, I think there's limits to how bad a team should be, like, in order to be watchable. But if you're going to be bad, be 7th, 6th.
And then, obviously, even in a normal year, it'd be way too early to guess, you know, the individuals who are going to get drafted other than maybe the top player or two. But then this year, given the lack of high school and college seasons and all of the uncertainty for next year about what's going to be happening, it's even more pointless. But that 7 or 8, you know, if Kansas City wins, I guess the Mets will be picking at 8. But 7 or 8, you know, should net them a really solid pick. And if Steve Cohen goes on a spending spree this winter and he signs a high profile free agent or 3, the Mets, you know, they'll lose draft picks starting with the 2nd one, so that'll make picking this first round guy even more important. So that would be a good outcome.
For sure.
Good first round pick, and then they lose their 2nd because the Mets are actually spending on free agents for a change. But who knows, because a lot is going to be going on in terms of the sale, and it's going to be happening while all these free agents are going to be making deals and blah, blah, blah. So I just hope the timing works out for everything.
And, like, hopefully if they're going to – I don't think they'll do it right now, like, because they just won't have the time to get the front office in, but they should have a smarter one, like a more analytically driven one. I would hope so. And like with the rumblings that there are with it's Alderson, who has always been like the godfather of the Moneyball movement, which is an analytics movement, and like that's kind of what he's built his brand on. And I think it was Heck from the Rays and Owens from the A's. Like, those are smart teams, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. If you're gonna hire from teams, you're gonna hire from those. Like, obviously I hope they don't run a Rays and A's budget, but I don't think they will, because Cohen is just gonna be like, here's the money. They're not going to be like, no, I don't want it. Like, I would rather run a small. They don't. I don't think they want to. I think they do it because they're forced to.
I think the hope is that these guys who've graduated from small market teams treat the team like how Friedman has treated the Dodgers.
Yes, like
that. That's the dream.
Like, you both. You could do both. Like,
yeah, right.
Like, you could be smart and look for the deals and look for the Chris Taylors of the world, like for a Dodgers example, and the Justin Turners even. for a Mets Dodgers example, but also sign Mookie Betts, you know, because you can afford to. Like the hope is that Sandy Alderson isn't like, no, we should not sign George Springer or JT Realmuto because I would rather just like add up the war, you know, like.
I mean, I think there's a realistic chance that they look at the squad as currently assembled and say, we don't really do a realistic path to contention.
Sure. I'm a little worried about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll be fine with whatever as long as there's an actual plan in place instead of whatever the last decade has been.
Yeah, that's really all you can ask for, I guess.
It's that, that's all I'm really, that's all I've ever wanted from the Mets.
Yeah.
It's just for them to have a plan that isn't like, maybe Adrian Gonzalez has something left in him.
Yeah.
And then execute it in a way where it might actually work.
So, like, I would kind of be mad if I'd be kind of upset if Cohen comes in and is like, we're trading DeGrom and building from the ground up. Because then, like, that's like 5 years of the Mets being totally unwatchable for something that probably won't work because it's baseball. And the chances of the prospects working is always kind of small. Like, you could go into a rebuild and never end it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could be stuck in it forever or, like, for 10 years. And, like, what's the point?
I guess I'm not opposed to the idea of a rebuild as long as it's a rebuild with actual planning and an endpoint in mind. Now, obviously, that'll change if the endpoint keeps getting pushed out, like the White Sox, you know?
But then there's also, like, the Orioles and the Tigers. And I don't want to watch
those.
Yeah,
no, I mean the White Sox haven't been good for 10 years. And
yeah, like, but that sucks. Like, now
Exactly my point is, like, I don't want that. I want, like, what's a good example? I don't know.
The Astros?
The Astros are the example, but there's a lot of other things going on there.
Well, yes.
maybe what the Padres are doing, where it seems like that might be coming together finally.
How bad were they? Like, how long were they bad?
They were pretty bad for a long time, but at least there was a process.
Yeah. About as long as the Mets.
And so, like, the thing is, like,
cratered. Yeah.
So the thing is, like, I think the Mets have such little money tied up in the future, and
There's a lot of creative ways where they could fix things quick.
Like,
how much pitching is available, you know?
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Like, they might need to sign, like, seven pitchers. And, like, are you going to do that? Like,
yeah, like, is that possible? Just in terms of, like, arms available?
And, like, not everyone is going to choose you, even though you
have exactly. Like, there's the realistic limits on it, but I don't know. We'll see. We literally know nothing about how this guy is going to run the team, other than I'm happy to see Sandy Alderson back.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing we could say for certain is that it probably will. It's very agnostic. It probably will be better, but maybe not.
Yeah. I would assume it's better than the Wilpons, but
exactly. Like, I think it's hard to say with any realistic idea that it'll be worse, given just how bad the Wilpons are.
But that doesn't mean it's good either.
But yeah, it might not be good by any stretch of the imagination. He could be Artie Moreno, you know?
Yeah. And then you've wasted Mike Trout. Well, like,
in the process of wasting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Trout might never be on a good team ever because Artie Moreno is bad. And so, like, if Cohen is like that, then, well, that's not good.
You know, bad, like, owners.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad owners.
Spend a lot of money.
Yeah, he does. He spends a lot of money. He just refuses to spend it on pitching.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. So it's just going to be. It's, to be honest, I'm a little excited, and I think the Alderson signing excited me a little bit. It's excited me a little bit more than just Cohen buying the team, because I don't think 72-year-old Sandy Alderson is going to be like, I want to engage in a 5-year rebuild.
Like, that's a good point.
Like, I think Sandy Alderson is going to come here and try. And
even,
like,
beyond that, I'm happy there's an adult in the room again.
Yes.
Hasn't been true in a long time.
And, like, I'm so curious, because Sandy is obviously good. Like, people like him from other organizations, and he was good here. Like, he built a World Series team with Jeff Wilpon breathing down his neck. So, if
yeah,
you could
like
do that.
Everything that came that was good last year was, like, holdovers from Sandy Alderson. Like, obviously.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
So, like, I'm very curious to see what he looks like with a budget for, like, the first time in a long time. Because, like, I think the A's spent a lot of money, like, a while ago, like, when he was building those, like, late 80s A's teams. I'm assuming mm-hmm. they spent money. But, like, after that, he was on the start, the A's when they didn't spend money, and then the Padres and then the Mets, you know? So I'm curious to see what Sandy now, with all of his experiences, looks like when he's able to splash cash around. It'll be fun.
Yep, hopefully we get to see it.
If there were a world record for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But here's the thing. Even if your MLB team got to take a break, your business didn't. And hiring has to keep moving, even when the game stops. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because it connects you to the best candidates fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you payment flexibility and full control over your hiring, so you only pay for what you need. Plus, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Indeed also gives you powerful tools to make your search easier, like sponsored job posts, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. 73% of online job seekers visit Indeed each month. Maybe that's why over 3 million companies have trusted Indeed to help bring on the important hires that keep your business moving. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
We are at war with a virus. We are not at war with each other.
I'm Sean Ramisburham, host of Vox's Daily News podcast, Today Explained. And we got Dr. Anthony Fauci on our latest episode. He's been a paragon of patience throughout this pandemic. But this week, he seemed to finally lose his cool while being questioned by Senator Rand Paul.
I challenge that, Senator.
I'm afraid, sir,
I would like to be able to do this because this happens with Senator Rand all the time.
Dr. Fauci joins me to talk about why he called the senator out and why, despite all the politics, Americans should still trust the vaccine approval process.
And if it turns out somebody tries to force it out, I tell you, I will be one of the first ones that will object to that.
Dr. Fauci, on Pandemic Politics, Today Explained, wherever you listen.
When it was announced by Major League Baseball in August last year? No, October last year. Jeez, it seems like forever and not that long ago. But when they announced that they're going to be radically changing the minor leagues, I think we all went through a lot of emotions, and for me, I think disbelief was, like, the biggest one. Because I figured that, yeah, they're just kind of posturing, and they're just going to bully the minor league teams into, you know, paying for stadium improvements or, you know, whatever it is that they want.
A few extra percentage points on something.
Right, for some more fees to the parent club, whatever. But then, and at the end of the day, things will just go back to normal. And weeks passed, month passed, and the reality of the situation, you know, became more and more apparent, and Major League Baseball is just going to ram everything that they wanted through based on their bad faith arguments. And at the end of the day, it was all about money and control. And we're officially at that point now, because on Tuesday, Major League Baseball is going to be having an official announcement that the Appalachian League is going to be operating going forward as a summer collegiate league, like Northwoods League or the Cape Cod League. We've gone over the history of the Kingsport Mets and of the Appalachian League in general. Go Johnsonville City Soldiers, of course. And, you know, it just is a shame that like 100 years of baseball history is going to be disappearing on a whim because a couple of billionaires want to cut literal pennies from their operating expenses. But the silver lining here, I guess, if you could even call it a silver lining, yeah, is that there is going to be baseball in those Appalachian League cities. It's not like just everything is just going to disappear and get shuttered and that's the end of it. And something is better than nothing. I don't know if things are going to be the same as it was when the teams were MLB affiliates, but I mean, there are going to be jobs. You know, they'll need the groundskeepers to maintain the fields, contractors to keep up with the stadiums, vendors to sell concessions and all that kind of stuff, people buying ads. So in that sense, at least those cities will have some economic boom. I was reading an article about the Cape Cod League finances, a little bit old. It's from 2017, but according to the article, the league and the 10 individual teams combined, they have about a $2.5 million, impact on local economies up there in Massachusetts.
It's worth noting though that the Cape Cod is literally like the world class college with that leagues.
Right. You know? Exactly. I mean, that is the model that, you know, everything
they're
else
at
is
the
based
literal
off.
Like top of the totem pole.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to find any like concrete numbers for the league, but a lot of teams, you know, because obviously the economic impact is kind of a major thing that all these local newspapers and stuff are talking about. But from a lot of these local newspapers, I found some numbers. I'm sure they're a little inflated because it would be in the team's best interests to kind of inflate how much money that they were contributing to local economies. But, you know, Kingsport generated roughly $1 million for the city of Kingsport, you know, in economic impact. Burlington Royals, Princeton Rays, the Bluefield Blue Jays, the Bristol Pirates, the Pulaski Yankees, they all generated about the same. The Johnson City Cardinals, the Greenville Reds, and the Elizabethton Twins, they generated about $600,000 for their respective cities. And then the poor Danville Braves, they generated about $50,000 for Danville. But, you know, you add everything up and we're talking about close to like $10 million or so a summer in a region that, you know, is struggling economically right now and has been for a while and probably isn't going to magically get better. So, like Ken was saying, if the Cape Cod League brings in about $2.5 million for that small slice of Massachusetts, a new Appalachian summer league that's just starting off that doesn't have that kind of gravitas to it, that doesn't have the status as the Cape, you know, they're going to bring in a fraction of that to the area. And that area obviously is bigger than just the little Massachusetts Cape.
Yeah.
And some of those cities rely more on that summer economic boom than those cities in Massachusetts, which are kind of well off. So not a good combination, but at least it's something. And I hate that mentality because it's basically, you know, thank you for these crumbs that you're dropping for us. But, you know, I guess you have to be realistic that at least something will be benefiting these cities. And then I think in terms of, you know, attendance or interest in going, the lack of a major league affiliation will hurt to some degree. But at the same time, I think that, like, I don't really know how to say this without sounding like dismissive, maybe, but like, you know, Kingsport and some of those other cities in the area, they're like small town country enough that just going to the ballpark to watch a game is just something you want to do, if that makes sense. You know, like,
it's an important part of like the entertainment of the community.
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter if it's the Mets, it doesn't matter if it's the Yankees, it doesn't matter if it's just some random team with random college players, but, you know, it's something to take the family out to see on the weekend. It's something to take your date to. It's something to just do when you have some free time. And those rivalries, I think that they exist. They transcend like the team name or who's playing. So, people should probably come out to see these guys regardless. And obviously that's good for those college players too, because playing in front of a rowdy crowd and a crowd that's into it is, you know, much better than playing in front of literally nobody.
For sure. And also, I like how it just expands, like, on a non-financial level. It expands the game. Because now, like, people who live in those areas, like, they can't, unless they travel, like, a far way usually, they can't go see a major league game for the most part. So, like, even if, like, people upstate, like, if you live in Binghamton, you could, I guess, drive down here, but that's, you're going to drive all the way back after, like,
a four-hour trip.
It's pain.
Exactly. Like, it's a whole thing. It becomes a whole thing. So, like, that might be their only chance to go see live sports. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's important, even though we, like, I live right in Brooklyn, and you guys live close enough to go see the Mets if you want to. So, like, that's different for us, where, like, we could just go see the Mets if we have the money to and want to. But, like, I don't know, for the most part, it's just, if I didn't live there and I lived upstate or I lived in a small town in the South, like, that's how I would see live sports. And now that's just gone. And that's kids who can't see live sports, and that's parents who can't take their kids to the game and stuff like that if they enjoy doing that. So it just sucks.
Mm-hmm. That's for a very long time, really, until I started doing like draft stuff. I could never understand really why college sports was so big. I mean, I didn't go to like a famous college or anything like that. I don't have any family members that did, so it's not like, you know, oh, I was born a boomer or something like that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So I just never really got why, like, who cares? You know, my mentality was always, who cares? Like, it's a school, whatever. But
I mean,
so
I went to a big college with a big athletic program, and I still don't care.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
But part of it is, for a lot of places, like, the colleges kind of take over the spot that your organized team would have. You know, I think that we're all very spoiled because there are so many things. I mean, you could go to a Mets game, a Yankees game, a Cyclones game, a Staten Island Yankees game, a Trenton Thunder game, a Lakewood Blucos game, the Rangers game, the Islanders game, the Devils game, the Knicks, the Nets.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many options. And for a lot of these places, like, well, your option is just the college team. So that's kind of where you have all of your passion going into. And same thing for now, you know, minor league teams is that's your best bet. You're really your only bet to see professional sports. So that's your thing. And hopefully, you know, the people take to these kind of this new college wood bat league in the same way, because, you know, it's maybe not professional, it is amateur, but you know what, hey, it's still kind of high level ish sports. So
it's not that all that far removed from the Appy League in terms of level of competition.
No, it probably is. It might even be a higher level. I mean, if we're honest. I guess it really depends on because MLB is going to be pulling the strings, you know, in the background. So, you know, does this new Appalachian League kind of take some of the luster away from the Cape? And, you know, in that case, then, yeah, the competition level is going to be pretty high. If it's something where the MLB is just like, yeah, whatever, do whatever you want to do, and they don't really care, and it just kind of, you know, plods along, then at best it'll be a third choice behind the Cape and the Northwoods League. And there are a lot of other leagues that I don't even know, you know, off the top of my head.
Oh, for sure.
Savannah
probably would be. Hmm?
So the former Savannah Sad Nats are in one.
Oh, okay. Right, that's
random,
right.
A random college with that league.
The Savannah Bananas, how could we forget? But yeah, it's, I cannot say that I've gone to like a high school or college level game to like cheer and watch anybody, so I don't know how it feels, I guess. But
or I mean I played college sports and but it was D3, so like no one went. So like we had people who would go, but it was like our friends, you know, like
right.
It was more like whenever I would go to games, it was because I knew people playing and I was like, yeah, I'll go to your game. Like I'll hang out, you know?
Well, I just hope, you know, at the end of the day that things work out more so for just the cities and the people there. You know, I don't want to sound callous or anything like that, but I really don't care about how the league itself does and the players. There's always places for them to play if they want to. But just for the people of Kingsport and the people of all those Appalachian League cities, you know, I hope that it all works out well and that the teams become draws and it helps out economically. All right. So does anyone have any last words this week?
Thank God the Mets season is over.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It got real sad. I recapped the Waka game last week. Like, I think it was like Wednesday. And I was like, oh boy, like this is just brutal.
I feel like that's when things like went downhill. Was sometime at the beginning or end of last week.
Because like they were in it still. Like they could have made the playoffs still, but I don't know. Like I think like it just got like rough to watch. Like it was always rough to watch, but like at that point I was just like, oh man.
Question for you guys: at what point did you like kind of give up?
Like I said before, I was kind of rooting for them to go 0-60, so.
I was in early, and then.
Basically, once Stroman opted out, I did not see how they were going to pitch enough, anywhere near enough.
Once they were like, we have to put Lugo in the starting rotation and doing all that craziness, I was like, it's over. Like it's not mathematically over, obviously, but now, even if Lugo balls out as a starter, it's going to be like 5 or 6 innings tops, and the bullpen is now horrifically bad. Like, it goes from, like, bad to, like, bottom 3 unit in the league. Because of, like, how little bullpen talent there is outside of
that Diaz sounds like really, the Mets.
Yeah. Like, yep. Diaz was really good this year.
All right. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, of course. I am at Steve Sipa. Lucas, who has been extremely quiet this episode, he is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLevin91. And Thomas is at SadMetSeasonSDN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.